Hello and welcome back to another episode of Beyond the To-Do List. I'm your host, Eric Fisher, and this is the show where I talk to the people behind the productivity. This week, I'm excited to welcome back to the show, Brian Falchuk. He's been on the show before. Last time it was to talk about his book, Do a Day, which is a great episode to go revisit. I'll make sure to link up to that in the show notes if you've not heard that one before or want to go revisit it. But this time we're talking about his new book, The 50-75-100 Solution, Build Better Relationships. And the reason that this book is important when it comes to productivity is that a lot of the productivity friction that we have comes in the form of relationships, whether that's professional relationships or family or friends or romantic relationships. And the great thing about the 50-75-100 solution is that it shows you how you can be the source of the solution to those problems and even proactively get ahead of them and eliminate them, or at least greatly reduce them. So in this conversation, Brian and I unpack the context of how he came up with this solution. And then don't worry, you're not going to have to do a lot of math, even though there's a small amount of math when it comes to the 50, the 75, and the 100. So put your calculator and your pad and pen away. You won't need them unless you're going to take notes on this conversation with Brian Falchuk. Well, this week, it is my privilege to welcome back to the show, Brian Falchuk. Brian, welcome back.
Hey, thanks for having me on again, Eric.
It's been a while. We noticed, but that's
the
okay.
Changed a little bit.
It's changed a little bit. Yeah. I mean, but that's okay. We changed too. And hopefully for the better. Last time we were talking about Do a Day.
Yes.
And that was really fun. In fact, I'll link up to that in the show notes for this episode. This one's different because we're not talking explicitly or specifically about productivity, although that's what the point of this whole podcast is talking about all the tangents of productivity, and one of those being relationships and the friction that inevitably comes about. So
we don't get to just work on our own, even if we are like solopreneurs, or you know, we don't work on a team, or like ultimately you interact with people. There's no way around that. And so how productive and enriching or positive that is matters for our productivity and for the value, like how much we value our life and get back from it.
Yeah. We've been talking a lot about actually in recent times on this show, the intersection between relationships and networking and productivity, as well as how technology plays into all of that in terms of, you know, Zoom burnout and things like that. And, and in fact, I think one of the things is, you know, sometimes people are doing just audio calls or all of these video calls, which, you know, it's the reason that Zoom burnout is a thing. It's not that just you're doing a lot of them. It's that it requires a different set of paying attention skills to look for the cues, right?
Yeah.
So
the energy spent is totally different. Like you have a phone call and you feel like you need to thank the person. It's like a nice little treat.
Yes. Yeah. And that's, I still, you know, for the sake of bandwidth, it is what I always say. I want to dive in to the 50-70-100 solution, and I don't want to go into the math just yet. I want you to maybe set up the context of, you know, how you stumbled upon this. What made you think of this, come up with this? You know, what led you to this point of talking about relationships in this way?
Yeah. So it, you know, it was born of my own situation, primarily in my marriage, where my wife and I were butting heads a lot, which I think a lot of people, not just married people, but a lot of people can understand. You know, you go through periods where your relationship's in a tough spot and there's a lot of me versus you, us versus them kind of mentality. That's the number 50, not to jump into the math, but it's like, it's 50-50, you know, in this whole thing, like it's me against you. I got half, you got half. And that doesn't really get you anywhere. You just keep slapping into each other. And, you know, our situation, like not to go back to the last conversation you and I had, Eric, but like my marriage was very much defined by this period where my wife became incredibly sick. We thought she was going to die. And that just sort of led us down a path of having very specific roles. And they weren't like loving husband and wife. It was more transactional. Like I do all the caretaking and she's busy with trying to, I mean, literally save her life, but then get and stay well, all for good reason. But you really fall into those patterns hard, and that doesn't leave a lot of room for connecting as human beings, as spouses. It just, it changes the dynamic. And as you continue down that path, you reinforce that more and more. It gets to be more and more kind of headbutting or just like two positions in a hole rather than one team coming together. And that was not an enjoyable way to live. I had started a job that had me traveling every week. And I mean, it's actually going back, like I was probably halfway through that job. I was there for 3 years. So it was like a year and a half in, but I was gone all the time. So like I'm gone 5 days a week and the 2 days on the weekend is like recovering from and preparing for being gone all the time. So we were really not doing anything to solve this issue. And both of us were pretty miserable with it. It's just that we didn't have to be around each other for 5 days. So that made it easier, but that's not sustainable. And each of us was doing work, you know, a therapist kind of, you know, someone to talk to, like to work on ourselves, but we were only working on ourselves, not on the other person, or how we relate to the other person. And it was in that context that someone, a therapist that I was seeing recommended this book on Buddhism, and I picked it up and started to read through it. And I really started to understand the relational nature of human beings and really of everything in the world. And it was just hitting me as like, I'm not working on this problem with my wife the right way, because I'm either just working on myself or complaining about what's going on within herself. And there's never anything about how are we influencing and affecting each other? And so that for me was like, there's something more to this that I need to explore. And the deeper I got into the book, the more books I wanted to read. So I went down this rabbit hole of really getting deep on a lot of the principles in Buddhism that honestly were like getting me excited by the path of changing this dynamic.
Wow. Yeah, that's great. I can see where, because I already know where we're going and what the math means, yeah. I can see how that brought you to this point. So I guess that's a good segue to just say, let's jump into what the 50, 75, 100 solution, is, and then what it means. And I've got different pieces of questions that go with all the numbers and everything. So yeah.
One, I hate like, some people see the numbers, they're like, oh God, I don't want to get into math. Like, I don't, it's like, ignore the numbers for a second.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just about, yeah. Well, it's like our pieces of this whole relationship.
Yeah. And in fact, I before we go to the numbers, I know that there's actually some context and some keywords you've got to set up first for us to understand how those numbers then come into play.
Right. Right. So there were three principles that I learned about in all this reading and research that really stood out to me. There's a lot that blew me away and inspired me in the research I did, but three in particular were really important, I thought, for what was going on with these relationship dynamics. And I should say, like, you know, I'm framing this around my marriage, but actually really early on, I also got to apply what I'm going to talk to you about in a work setting. It's something I use in my larger family, like, you know, my siblings, my parents, friends, even strangers. Someone who read the book texted me after using it at a gas station with the guy at the pump next to him. So like it's pretty broadly applicable. The ideas, the three principles from Buddhism are happiness seeking, interdependence, and impermanence. And so those three things are really critical to understand. And happiness seeking is by far the most important one. But this is the notion that we all do what we do in our pursuit of happiness. Like we may say something that someone else doesn't like or do something to them that they don't like, but it's not just to be mean to them. It's because we want something, whether we're aware of that or not. And you can say like, well, you just called me a name. Like, how does that have anything to do with your happiness? It's like, well, maybe I'm hurting. And maybe the tools I'm using to try to stop hurting are flawed. But for whatever reason, I decided, you know, flinging an insult back at you was going to make me feel better. Even if it doesn't, you know, punching you when you've punched me will make me feel better. Even if it doesn't, you know, it doesn't take away my pain. And sometimes our pursuit of happiness help someone else. You know, like if you go and volunteer at a soup kitchen, or, you know, you give someone a dollar that's down in their luck, that's on the corner asking for help, like whatever it is, that act helps them, but it probably makes you feel better. So sometimes our pursuit of happiness can help other people, and sometimes it may stand in the way of their happiness. When you think about it like that, suddenly things can feel like less of a personal attack. And I think that's really important, because so often when we get into these headbutting situations or arguments, we feel that the other person is doing this to us. Right. And we feel like they sought us out to hurt us. It's like, you know, I always use the story of getting cut off in traffic, A, because, well, it was a true story, but I think everybody can relate to it. And B, it really sets this notion up well. It's like when, you know, if you're driving along the highway, someone cuts you off. It's not like they woke up that morning and they're like, you know what I should do today? I should find this random person who I've never met, find their car on the highway and get in front of it unsafely. Like that would be a great thing for me. And it's like, well, obviously that didn't happen, right? They thought getting in front of you would get them a little further ahead, would put them closer to their goal, would, you know, maybe they thought you cut them off, so they want to get back at you. But it's not actually about you as a human being. It's about them and what they want. And so if you think about it like that, you're less likely to fall into road rage and like try to cut them off in return or scream at them, even though they can't hear you, or flip your middle finger at them, like whatever it is we tend to do in response. If you don't see it as being personally sought out to be wronged, it's much easier to choose a different path in response. So happiness seeking is incredibly important, especially in these heated moments where we would feel like this person's doing something to us. And so that's the first and most important piece. And that's the one I most actively employ, especially in those moments where someone's saying something really hurtful or has done something that harms me or takes away from my happiness, or, you know, whatever it is that normally their response is like, oh, wow, they did this to me, or you threatened me, or, you know, seeing it as you verb me, you know? Mm-hmm. So happiness seeking is the first step. Interdependence is the second. And what this is that nothing exists in and of itself. Like no one is just good or just bad. We are those things in relation to different people and different situations. You know, I say like, that's why bullies have friends, right? You may see them as this terrible person. And, you know, if you had a young son and there's some bullies at school and, you know, we'd go to like the chorus night or whatever performance the kids are doing. And you see like that bully kid is like laughing and friendly with three kids over them. Like, well, obviously they're not bullying everyone. They're not just a bully. They're a bully to some people or some people some of the time. I mean, he has kids who were mean to him in first grade that are his friends in fifth or sixth grade. You know, we've all been there. We fight with our loved ones and then we love them. You know, we go through relationships where we're madly in love and then we break up and we hate the person and never want to see them again. So different people in different situations have a different sense of each other. If you change the people or you change the situation, then you can get a different outcome. You fight and you make up. You have a conversation about it. You change the dynamic of the situation. You understand each other better and you're in a good place again, or maybe the opposite. So we are interdependent with each other, which means we can get to a different place by affecting each other. And that's the dynamic by which our happiness seeking ends up playing out. Cause what I do in pursuit of my happiness, cause we're interdependent, may impact you and how you feel about me or how you view me. And the last piece is impermanence. And this is the notion that the only constant is change, right? Everything changes, even just aging. Like everything is slightly different from moment to moment, but certainly over long spans of time, which for me really just gives us hope. You know, we feel like all we do is argue. We'll never get anywhere. This person's always going to be difficult, but there's something changing in them and in you constantly. What if you can tap into that? And because we're all interdependent, if you change or you change that situation or they're changing, the situation's changing, which means we can get a different version of them because we're all interconnected. And the way we affect that change is through getting at or appealing to the happiness seeking that's going on. So it's a lot, but these three things really go together. We've got the way to think about it and the tool to use to make change. We have the connection between all of us that allows that tool to actually have an impact. And then we have this reminder that it's worth the effort because everything changes. So it doesn't have to be like this always and forever until the end of time. And that's kind of the backdrop to 50, 75, 100.
Brian and I will fully unpack the 50, 75, 100 solution in a moment. But first, I want to say thank you to our two sponsors for making this episode possible. First up is a new one that I'm thrilled about, which is KiwiCo. And as you know, we're coming up on the holidays this year, and they're going to be a little bit different. We're in discussions with family and friends about how we're going to do things differently, cost-wise, travel-wise, staying at home-wise, safety and health-wise. And no matter what, they're going to look different. But we've already started to become accustomed to the feeling of acceptance of that and really honing in on what's important. And one of the things for me that's most important is spending time with people. And that's where KiwiCo comes in this year, because they deliver these hands-on science and art projects for kids of all ages. I've got a teenage daughter and a middle elementary son. And so trying to find something that they're interested in and will get them off screens for a while can be difficult. And my hope was that when we received our crate from KiwiCo, we would get to unbox it and get that initial excitement like you do with unwrapping a present. But not only that, we'd get to open it up and really spend some time, quality time together in a mix of creativity and learning and fun and letting them do things to experiment and me standing back and letting them do it while also being involved and helping point to the instructions or the directions. You know, that balance of parenting. And I gotta say, KiwiCo delivered. My son and I put together this glowing pendulum, and he loved it because it was something to put together as you follow through the instructions, much like other things he's done. But this had a unique twist that at the end and throughout, there were technical aspects of hooking together the electronics and the wires and the structure of it. And of course, when you're all done with the construction of it and the fun you have there to discover all of the different things that it can do. So it was time well spent, and it was quality time spent with my son, and it was a thrill to do that. And I'm really thankful to KiwiCo for this opportunity. And what's great is that KiwiCo is doing this work for you, that you don't have to track down these projects. They've got you covered. And to be able to have these kind of high quality engineering and science and art projects for my kids, it's pretty amazing. And so again, everything we needed was in the crate. We started right away. We made plans to, when it came, pull it out that night after dinner and start working on it. We've already started looking at some of the other options to order, and there's no commitment, so you can pause or cancel at any time. I highly encourage you to take a look at KiwiCo. Take advantage of this offer they've got, which is to get 50% off your first month plus free shipping on any crate line with the code BEYOND at KiwiCo.com. That's KiwiCo.com. And the promo code is BEYOND. That's 50% off your first month and free shipping on any crate line. Use code BEYOND at KiwiCo.com. Seriously, if you're a parent or if you have kids you need to get gifts for, consider KiwiCo. This is a great option. Again, KiwiCo.com, promo code BEYOND. This episode's also brought to you by one of my favorites. It's Text Expander, the tool that makes it easy for your team to get the right words for every situation. So if you need to keep the legal team happy or delight your customers and have effective answers ready at your fingertips, you can rest easy knowing Text Expander's got you covered. Their latest version now has improved statistics for reporting for organizations, including the ability to build reports with customizable date ranges for enterprise and individuals, so you can track how much time your team saves. In fact, I had somebody private message me on Twitter asking me for an affiliate code for Text Expander, and I gave them textexpander.com/podcast because that gets you 20% off your first year. And then they were thrilled because their team was going to be using this. Because again, Text Expander is going to keep your team consistent, accurate, current, and it just makes it super easy for you to share text and images with a whole staff, keeping everybody on the same page and on track. It allows them to work faster and smarter, summoning up that text and images with powerful shortcuts and abbreviations, because Text Expander is doing the typing for you when you summon up a snippet with a short abbreviation. It doesn't matter what your team is using. It's available on Mac and Windows, Chrome, an iPhone, and iPad. And like I mentioned earlier, you can get 20% off your first year by going to textexpander.com/podcast. It's a great way to set your team up for success. Textexpander.com/podcast. Okay, so now that we have not just set up the premise and the context, we can now get to the actual mathematic equation.
The numbers
themselves, which honestly are not at all complicated once you explain it. So go ahead and walk through it.
And it's much easier with a picture. So yes. If anyone's listening and you're by like a computer or something, just go to Amazon and Google 50, 75, 100 solution and you'll see the cover art and you'll be like, okay, I can follow along. So we, you know, I was saying the 50-50 of a relationship, me versus you. And on the cover, there's two like paper doll pictures, paper doll people. We, instead of seeing it as 50-50, and that the 100 is just, you know, the 100%, the whole of the relationship. So we've got the 50, everyone gets that. But actually, I see it as four quarters rather than two halves. And the reason why is because each of us, each of our 50% is split in half between our actions and our reactions. So our actions are what we're choosing to put out into the world of our own free will. Our reactions are how we're responding to what the other person is doing. And you know, we can choose to put something different out into the world. That's not new. But what I realized is my reactions are based on, you know, I'll use the example of my wife because she can't hear me right now, so she won't get mad at me for focusing on her. She's doing things and I'm responding to that. I have a choice in how I respond. It doesn't mean it's easy. You know, she calls me a name or says something mean or whatever. Doesn't mean it's easy to not react poorly to that, but I still can. And I think it's important to recognize that as like a, you know, oh, you have a choice. It's like, well, wait a second. That person just like, you know, punched me. I don't have a choice. I didn't ask them to, you know, they just stole my wallet. I don't have a choice. It's like, it doesn't mean it's easy, but you always have a choice in what you do in response.
Even if there was nothing else that came out of this solution, just this one piece, you can choose your reaction. You can choose how to react. We often dumb down and think, oh, I don't have a choice. I'm a victim. In other words, when we first come to acknowledge that that isn't true, that we are not a victim. Again, it goes back to what you were talking about earlier, where the person didn't wake up just to offend you today.
Yeah.
So,
So this is where happiness seeking comes in. If you can understand a different motivation that's less about coming down on you and just making your life suck, it's a lot easier to react differently. And the reason why I'm not focusing on the actions is most people accept that what I'm doing of my own free will, exclusive of that person's actions, yeah, I can choose to do good things with that. But then they came along and they were so mean and they did this and they did that. I didn't have a choice but to react in this way. So the reactions are where we tend to have more of our problem. And the reality is it's still a choice. And the reality is if we change the way our mind is framing what they just did, whether we are consciously trying to react differently, we probably will because our energy and our emotions are different. So you receive from them and you process with this idea of happiness seeking, and then you choose to put something different out in the world. And this is where it goes from 50-50 to 75, because over on their half of the problem, they're split in half, just like you are. They've got actions and reactions. So half of them is a response to what you're doing, which means if you put out a different version of you, if you choose to make a different reaction to their behavior, you're giving them a different version of you to react to in turn. So they say something mean. If you give them a better version of you, their reactions could go in a better direction. So you end up going from just controlling yourself. You know, I can only fix me. They're the problem. Now you have control or influence over three quarters of the problem because you control yourself. You choose better for yourself and you're influencing half of them. So three quarters, 75% of that relationship problem are either directly or indirectly under your control and influence. That was the wake up for me. It's like, it's not hopeless. My wife will never be nice to me. Or, you know, I told the story of a coworker who was trying to get me fired. Like, I can't do anything about them. Well, wait a second. What if I respond differently? What if I don't feed into like with this coworker, she's setting me up to look bad in front of our boss. Like, what if I do different than what she had preconceived in her head was going to be my response? She thought I'd go nuts when she threw this bomb and, you know, argue and she would just out argue me and win and I get fired. What if I don't go into that? What if I choose a completely different path? I might get a different response out of her. So now instead of just feeding into it and like 50-50 with her, I would lose. She's super respected, super smart. She was a litigator. Like, she's used to arguing with people and winning. I don't stand a chance 50-50. But what if I can influence her behavior? That's 75. If I do that, I can move the whole, the 100% to a better place. And that's what I've been doing. And that's what I've been trying to teach with people. And, you know, I put this into action really quickly because things were in a particularly tough spot with my wife. And then this coworker situation popped up like right at the same time. And I was shocked with how quickly it worked. With my wife, it took a little, you know, it took a couple of weeks. With the coworker, it was like in real time. And I was like, there's something to this. And so I started to use it more and I started to share it with people that I was coaching and, you know, who were talking about difficult situations they're in. And I was like, okay, this is actually, it's not just for husbands and wives or boyfriends and girlfriends or girlfriends and girlfriends or whatever. It's working in all these different situations, very different dynamics. There's something to this. And what I would say to be clear is it doesn't mean that you guys like hold hands and skip off together. It doesn't mean everything great, but it does mean it's better than what it is. And in some cases, that means you walk away. You know, it doesn't mean no divorce. It doesn't mean you stay in every job forever. But it's a question of how you exit and what's left of you as a result of that. That's really important too. So, you know, can you co-parent? Can you gracefully exit the role and put the company in a good position? Because burning bridges doesn't tend to serve anybody. So, you know, how do you get to a better place in the situations you're at? It doesn't mean you stand there and you take a beating. So I want to be clear on that because some people are like, well, you know, if you're in an abusive situation, why would you stay? Like, what if the best answer is that you should get divorced? Yeah, it still might be. But, you know, you want to do that with lots of blood, or do you want to do that in a way that it's amicable and you're not fighting for the rest of your life? Like, I would much rather have that.
Well, speaking of fighting, this and the way that the action and the reaction play into each other, how the 50 is your actions and reactions, and then how you can influence their reactions, specifically that influencing their reactions feels a lot like the martial art of judo, where you use, you know, their force back against them. And, and it's not that you're wanting to use their force. Again, I use the word fighting with air quotes to say, it's not that you're fighting them. It's that they may even without knowing it be fighting themselves and sabotaging their own happiness seeking by attaching to you and thinking you're in their way. And you might, and you, and very well, to be truthful, you might be, but maybe you don't have to be. And that's, again, that goes to interdependence. But what I was trying to get at here was, that the judo is, in a sense, using their force that they may be meaning for good or for ill, but you know, for their own good, but without knowing it as, and ill towards you. You can disarm them and use their force against them, and even use their force with your force and get together to both seek happiness together.
Yeah. I mean, judo is, it's about disarming. It's about incapacitating their attack.
Yeah.
It's not about killing people.
No, it's about undoing. It's about deflecting, undo, and not in a bad way. Deflect gets a bad rap, but it's about, like the word I went with earlier, disarm. We usually think of that as being like a kicking something, you know, kicking the gun out of their hand, disarming the bomb, but it's really just to de-escalate. There's a better word.
Yeah.
De-escalate in terms of things escalating. Cause this is the other thing that popped in my head earlier. I know I'm rambling here, but I like this cause you got me going. The whole factor of, okay, I'm 50, they're 50 in the 100. That's where the 100 comes in, because I don't know if we mentioned that yet, but that's pretty obvious. We both have our actions. That's our, each of us have a 25. And then there's the other 25 in our individual 50 that is reactionary. And the problem comes in is where I'm reacting and they're reacting, and we both just escalate.
Yes.
And this is owning your, this is being self-aware of your own actions, self-aware and present with your own reactions, and then even 25 over into their side of things to disarm their reactions. That's where my mind is. I'm just jumbling all together, but
No, but I mean, so Eric, the cool thing is then you, like, normally when we're reacting against each other, we get in this self-perpetuating, like, vicious cycle. When you start to change, like, you give them a different version of you, even only a little bit, but a different version of you to react to, they react differently. And it may take a couple of back and forths before you start to break the cycle, but they eventually get into a place where they're giving you a better version of them to react to because you're starting to de-escalate them. And what you end up doing is you get to a virtuous cycle where you're each giving better versions of yourself for the other one to react to. So it stops being so much active work and it just ends up being better. And like you start to break that cycle, and you do that with enough repetition, enough consistency, and you change more permanently the dynamic that you're dealing with. And that's where it gets really powerful. It's not, doesn't have to just be for the one off, like, okay, we're in a fight, how do I stop it? And we're talking about like stronger negative situations, fights, but it doesn't just have to be for fights. It can be for kind of innocuous situations or like blah, you know, they're not good, they're not bad, but like, is that, do you just want not bad relationships in your life? Or do you want ones that are enriching and helpful? And, or, you know, you're in a negotiation of some kind. Like, what can you do to help move both of you to a better place instead of we're each going to, you know, I want 0, you want 100. So we're going to settle on 50. It's like, well, neither of you got anything then. You're both worse off. And that's not a great place to be. Like, I call it the last cookie problem. Like, if there's one cookie, I use this because like cookies are delicious, but if there's one cookie left and we both want it, the answer isn't to split it. I know that's what they teach you in nursery school, but like then neither of us actually got what we wanted. We got something, but we're not, neither of us is happy. So how do we both get to a place where we're happy about what we get? Even if it means, you know, one of us walks away with nothing, or we, neither of us gets what we wanted, but we've come to a new understanding where we appreciate getting half of it. Each of us is good. But if we just split it right off the bat, like, we're not ready for that. Now we've each compromised and maybe don't feel good about it.
Interesting. Yeah. Well, and the other piece to this is that it's not about every single individual encounter you have with somebody. It's, you know, in the workplace, which is a lot of where this comes into play, or even you're constantly going to be working with some of the same people over and over again, repeatedly. You know, they may come and go in seasons, but it's that long-term, de-escalation and setting of, you know, how do we optimally work together towards both of our happiness? Things that comes to mind for me is that, you know, I may not even fully be aware of what I'm needing clarity on to seek in terms of my own happiness. And so I should afford that doubt to somebody else. You know, again, that's kind of the way I see, you know, influencing their reactions, is that in that disarming, we can get to, well, what's the real problem here? Because sometimes that's even something that's unknown to both people until you really start to dialogue.
Right. And each of you probably has a sense of what it is, and you're both wrong.
Right.
You know, so like you got to come together to figure out where the actual problem lies. And it's probably a misunderstanding of the other person. Again, like, it's the happiness seeking. So what are you doing to get to a place where you understand, where you can appreciate what might be going on in their head?
And I think, again, that's one of the things that just never, we just don't go that far. We go to, you know, we spend a lot of time thinking self-help, where, okay, how can I be the best me? And, you know, or we'll take it one step further and we'll say, okay, well, how can I react to other people better? How can I still remain aware of my choice that I always have as to how I am going to react? But we don't take it one step further to the influencing their reaction, or even disarming their reaction, because we feel, no, that's on them. Like, if you're going to react poorly to me and I'm being good to you, like, that's on you. And to a point, that is true, but that's not really what you're saying here.
Right. And the idea of actually pausing and thinking about what someone else cares about, anytime you can pause, you're going to probably get to a place where you start bringing more rational thought into it. So a piece of this is all just about like buying yourself a little bit of space to think and think about values. But here, like, you don't know what they actually care about, but it's worth trying to think about it. And for a lot of people, you know, when I work on this with them, their initial response is like, they just want to be mean. I'm like, nope, that's not it. You're still like, you're at the reaction space. So why might they want to be mean? Like, you got to get to what actually matters to them. And, you know, my example with my coworker was interesting because she had been going after another one of our peers really nastily. And no one really knew why. And it was like, oh, they just hate each other. Like, anytime someone says just, you should know, like, okay, what you're about to hear is probably not true. It's an oversimplification. And then she and I were really good friends. And then boom, one day she came at me really hard and sent a very nasty email to our boss, the CEO, myself, and our CFO. And it was like laying out all of the ways that I'm super incompetent and ruining the business and need to go immediately. And, you know, what could my reaction be? Oh, great. Now she hates me too. Like, yeah, maybe, but is that helping me? Is that going to inform me on what I need to do in response? Cause the gut reaction is to just like bite back. Like, she had all these bullet points with all these quote unquote facts, and I have the data. None of what she's saying is right. So I'm like, I can refute all this and I can point to the source of the data, but that's what she's expecting. So like right now, what she wants for whatever reason is for me to get agitated and fly off the handle and say things that she's probably anticipating I'll say, and she's probably got a response ready to go for that. So stop. Like, that's not going to help me. So just feeling attacked and wronged by her is not actually setting me up to navigate this effectively. So I needed to pause, and I couldn't totally understand what she wanted. And I will say, like, what ultimately came to be, I never would have seen that coming. Turns out, like, she had screwed something up very, very seriously, and it was pretty dramatically putting the business at risk. And she was trying to hide it. And she's very smart and is certain of her intelligence. And so her view was, she's the only one capable of fixing this. So she has to do that before anyone finds out what happened, versus like, wow, I found a problem. Let me rope in my peers and let's see if we can solve this together, which would have been the right answer. So anyone who was stumbling upon this problem to expose it, she would then go crazy on, because that was a risk to her plan and her employment. And she just thought we'd mess it up further. So I didn't know that I was starting to expose the problem. You know, I was just going about running my function. And in the course of that, things were coming out and I was alerting the business to it. I had no clue what the reason was behind it. And now I know, you know, she was afraid that I was going to expose her. Same thing with our peer, that he was doing things that would have put her problems front and center, and he didn't know either. But, you know, on the surface, like, you just look like she just randomly hates us all of a sudden and she likes to argue. So, okay, maybe all that's true, but that doesn't really put me in a position to figure out how to respond. And so if you can't find the root happiness that they're after, then you need to ask. And that can seem difficult and scary, but you have to engage in a way that allows you to, instead of blocking them, which is how they see you, that you stand in the way of their happiness, like, appear to be stepping aside and putting your arm out. It's like, let me help you get to your happiness. Tell us what you're looking for.
So how did you do that in this case? Like, what did you do?
Well, so she sends this scathing email, and it's like 5 or 5:30 or something on a Friday afternoon. So of course it's like end of the day. Thank you for ruining the weekend. That was awesome. And you know, normally I would go off and be like, this is wrong, and, you know, whatever. But I just realized, like, hang on a second. I don't understand what she's after. None of this data is real. So, like, it's not that she doesn't know the data. So she's either making this up or someone gave her bad data. And, like, in either case, that's a bigger thing than I'm going to solve in a nasty email. So I can't just bite back. And by the way, the CEO is watching. So if she sends this really scathing email and I know she's wrong, ultimately she should look unprofessional for doing that, or she will be found out to be wrong about it. But if I go down that same path, then I'm going to look unprofessional and wrong as well. And if I'm interested in staying employed, I want to stay on the right side of this. So I can't engage in this kind of childish name calling accusation thing that she's trying to pull me into. So the first thing I wrote in my email back was thank you, which I will say, like, my teeth might have been gritted together while I was typing those words. But I was like, I know I need to do this, but it's killing me. But I'm reading about the stuff. I believe in it. So I'm going to live it. Worst case, like, she's going to win if I engage, and if I don't engage, and if I take this new approach, you know, I didn't have the name yet for it, but if I have this sort of Buddhism based view, she may still win, but like, I have nothing to lose. I might as well try to do it better, because I know I'm going to lose if I try to go head to head with her, because everyone does. So I said, thank you. And I wanted to at least acknowledge that maybe we're not all on the same page, but not argue about it. So I just said, you know, I'm seeing something different in the data, but emails over the weekend is probably not going to lead us to figuring out what's going on. Why don't I find us all some time to sit down and talk about this? Like, total de-escalation and not arguing, not headbutting, but instead, like, while I acknowledge, like, okay, maybe there's something, you know, that's off in the numbers that everyone's throwing out, we all need to work together and figure it out. And I left it at that. And I didn't put this in the book, but my boss actually sent an email back. I guess while I was writing, he was also responding. And he's like, that's a fair point, and said her name. And I was like, no, it isn't. It's all made up. Like, it's not a fair point at all. It's the definition of not a fair point. But we sat down. We talked about it. She, you know, I set the meeting. I just sort of said, you know, she sent this email, very concerning. It looks like, you know, that if that's all true, there's a serious problem brewing in the business. I'm sure none of us wants that to play out. And then I kicked it to her. I said, why don't you lay out what you've been seeing? And more importantly, like, I want to understand what your concerns are and what your thoughts are about what we should do about it. Cause I didn't expect she was going to sit there and be like, I think you need to be fired. It's like, well, even if I'm fired, the problems are still the problem. So you still have to solve them, whether I'm here or not. But yeah, it was a little bit of a risk that I took, because she might have said that. No, she did. I don't think she'd look particularly professional or good. But, you know, so be it. So she went through her bullet points, and she's like, you know, and these numbers and those, and really angry and strong. And then just stopped. And I was like, you know, thank you. I wasn't gritting my teeth this time, because I was comfortable with where I was going with this. But I said, and can you just share your concern for the business and what you think we should do about it? And so what she ended up saying for her concern was, like, really rational and reasonable. And all of us in the room were concerned with the same thing. So it's like, oh, we all ultimately have the same happiness we're seeking. We have very different views on what's threatening the happiness and what to do about it. But we're all actually aligned. That's a much easier place to move forward from. And so, you know, she shared some ideas that some of them were interesting. Some of them, like, her wrong data needed to be right for those to make sense. But I stopped appearing to stand in the way of her happiness then. And I just said, you know, I think that's a really great point. If that's real, like, that is a serious issue that we need to address. I think we can do these things you're talking about. What if I did this as well? Would that be helpful? And she was kind of, I think she's taken aback, because I still wasn't arguing, and what I had thrown out was really supportive of her. And so she just, like, totally different, you know, that 25% in her, that reaction space, like, I'd short-circuited it. And so suddenly the whole meeting came down, and it was like, yeah, okay, what if we do this? We can do this. We had a plan. Now, we'll say we were never friends again. We had just had dinner together while we were, you know, we traveled quite a bit for work. So, like, the executive team was in another city. She and I grabbed dinner. We're both vegans. So it was kind of, you know, like, we were the weirdos. Like, we never had a meal together like that again. It was professional, but not friendly. But we could do it. We could work together, and it was real. And she never came for me again. She never pulled one of those stunts again. And, you know, that's a really good example of, like, it doesn't mean you're all hugging each other and it's all good. But I would definitely take where it went to from where it was. And that gave me the space to get on with my job, which is a big, important, and difficult job. And I didn't have time or energy to spend on the sort of games that she was playing. And it turns out, within a few months, the problems had come out too clearly. She couldn't hide anymore, and she ended up leaving. And I'm not going to, that was not my happiness. Like, it was a lot easier without her there, but the real issues, like the problems were real. They had impacted the business. We missed our chance to get in front of them, and trying to clean them up wasn't great. So, you know, if we all cared about the same happiness, which is what we figured out in that meeting, wouldn't it have been great if we could have gotten to that in the first place? And that's what I saw with my peer who she was fighting with. Like, that was 8 months before she took me on. What if we had gotten to that point then? So it was like, not only does this approach work, what a waste when we don't use it, because we could have avoided this whole mess. And like, you know, there's hundreds of people working in that company that would all be in a better place, and the company would be better financially if we didn't have to deal with that. So it's not as simple as just like two people who don't get along. There's all kinds of different repercussions to that all over the place, whether it's, you know, in your home, in your business, in your family, whatever it might be. It's not just about that one interaction between the two of you. Relationships stand in the way of everything or facilitate everything. So it's really, really powerful. You can't get away from it.
It's great to hear an example like that, you know, in the workplace, as well as, you know, how you originally started getting into it, which was, you know, basically the most important relationship you have, your marriage. And so, it's great to see that this principle, this solution, it is kind of a one size fits all, because it's always about you and the other person. It's always about, in whatever relationship it is, it's about having that, you know, in mind. So it works. So
totally.
Well, this has been great talking again, and I want to put everybody over towards where they can either find out more about you and or grab the book. So where would you like me to link up in the show notes, and you can shout that out now here too?
Yeah, so people can go to brianfalchuk.com. It's BRYANFALCHUK.com, and you can get to all of my books, and I've got stickers and hats too, and other fun stuff. And if they heard the Do a Day episode, there's a masterclass for Do a Day now, so you can actually engage in that and take yourself through the journey to go out and do it and live a better life every day.
Nice. I'll link up to all that in the show notes. And Brian, keep me posted on what you're working on next, and great talking with you.
You too, Eric. It's great.
Well, that's another podcast crossed off your podcast listening to-do list. I hope that you enjoyed this conversation with Brian. I know that I did. This was something that kind of, honestly, if I'm going to pull back the curtain a little bit, really reveals something about me. I am too reactionary when it comes to my wife and my kids and even other people. And this is something that I am personally working on. So to be aware of this, to have self-awareness of it, but then self-awareness of my awareness of other people and their factoring into the 50, 75, 100 solution, but also my part in their reactions, kind of mind-blowing. I've been sitting with this now for a few weeks since we recorded this, and it's done some good for me to re-listen to the episode. And so I know that if you've made it this far in the episode, you've probably had some benefit from it. If you would do me the favor of sharing this episode with somebody else that you know needs to hear it, a lot of good is going to come from this episode and this solution. Because if you look around at the world, that's where we're at right now. People not really listening, just reacting, just escalating back and forth. And that's not any good for anybody. So if, again, you would do me that favor of sharing this episode with somebody, you can click the share button here in whatever your podcast player app of choice is, or head on over to the show notes at beyondthetodolist.com, where you'll find your choice of share buttons there. Thank you so much for sharing. Thanks for listening. And I'll see you next episode.